This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Checking in now on the movie business, dominated at the moment by the release of The Hunger Games, the first film adaptation of a phenomenally successful series of young adult novels set in a dystopian, divided America, where teenagers from different regions are pitted against each other for survival.
I just keep wishing I could think of a way to show them that they don't own me. If I'm gonna die, I wanna still be me.
I just can't afford to think like that.
The opening of The Hunger Games is shaping up to be the biggest Hollywood event of the year, which got us wondering about how small independent theaters fit into an industry based on big sales and even bigger hype. So here with more is our go-to film consultant and commentator, Garen Daly. Hi, Garen.
Hi, Virginia.
So you've seen The Hunger Games first. Up or down, you know?
Oh, thumbs up. Thumbs up. They did a very good job with the film, although I'm kind of restricted about what I can say because there's an embargo on.
Okay, so, you know, a hole would open in the floor and you'd fall through.
They would send stormtroopers to my house late at night and take me away.
We don't want that to happen. But at the risk of sounding a little out of touch, can you explain to me what the fuss over The Hunger Game is? I mean, I was under the impression it was like Twilight, I mean, for 14-year-old girls.
That's actually a very good point because it is sort of like Twilight, and it's sort of like Harry Potter, and that's what Hollywood is counting on right now. And in this particular case, it's Lionsgate / Summit Pictures. And what they've done is they've picked up this book called by Suzanne Collins called The Hunger Games, which when they picked it up did not have the buzz. But it has caught some sort of resonant cultural chord right now. And there are 25 million copies of the book have been sold.
Wow.
And it is crossing generations. It's not just about 16-year-old girls. It's about 16-year-old girls, their brothers and their parents, all reading the book, all talking about the book, and all wanting now to see the movie. The advanced sales on the movie are just off the charts right now.
So banking on a big book like that is what the industry is now doing.
What they want to do is they want to create tent poles. They want to create something that's going to have a super brand awareness right out of the gate and then be able to have sequel after sequel after sequel, just like Harry Potter, just like Twilight, and just like all the other big films, Iron Man, all these other sequels. We had 27 sequels last summer. That's the kind of tent pole that Hollywood likes because of the brand recognition. It makes it easier to sell.
So just how big is this event in Hollywood, this opening?
This opening is going to blow a lot of people's socks right off their pants or their legs. Right now, 2,000 shows have already been sold out. Advanced sales for the midnight show are at $15 million before the film is even
Which is tonight at midnight, yeah?
It's Thursday at midnight, yeah. Yep. Tonight, well, Friday morning, whatever, however you want to look at it. But, and the expectation right now on the conservative side, is $116 million opening gross for the weekend. That's going to be the largest March gross of all time. There are other people talking about $120 to $130 million gross, which would put it in the top five, and it might even come into at $150 to $160 million. Now, put this into perspective. The film cost $90 million to make. For it to make money, including all the advertising,
right,
and stuff like that, you have to work up roughly $200 million. It could possibly make its money back completely in the first week, which for the distributor, who is under fire from Carl Icahn and all these other people, it's exactly what they need.
Well, let's talk about the distributors in little theaters. I mean, when you have a huge event opening, a movie event opening at zillions of theaters at the same time, all these kind of attendant kind of promotions, what about these little theaters, the little ones that we like to support, the mom and pops? How do they figure into this?
Not very well.
Huh.
And right now, it's a very, very scary time for them. And it's going to be a watershed year. Right now, the predictions are there are roughly 40,000 screens in the United States. 10% of those screens are going to be closed by the middle of 2013.
Wow, what's behind that?
Well,
I mean, just lagging sales?
Some of it's lagging sales. Most of it has to do with the fact that there has been a huge shift towards digital projection. In the past, it's been $35 million or 35-millimeter films. The industry realized several years back that if they converted over to digital, they would roughly save $1 billion a year in print shipping costs by going to digital.
So no longer on the big reels of film.
We won't hear that clicking sound that's so wonderful and soothing as you're watching a film. I love that sound of the film going through the gate. Yes, that's going to be gone. Obviously, some theaters will continue, but when you're talking about 80% of all the theaters in the United States right now have already converted to digital, and that the distributors like, you know, Fox, 20th Century Fox has said, as of January 1st, no more 35 millimeter prints.
Wow.
The writing is on the wall. You either have to convert or you're going to be left in the wayside, or you're going to have to find another economic model. The fact is that it costs around $70,000 per screen for a theater to convert over to digital. And when you think about some of these small mom and pops that only make maybe $100,000 per screen, and that's gross,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe $10,000, $15,000 in profit, they're not going to see a profit for 5 years. That means they're going to be working for nothing for 5 to 6 years. It becomes really difficult to justify working.
All right, so you're talking about digital, but there's even on top of that 3D. I mean, I know there were a couple of great 3D films this year that I could not see locally on 3D projection or 3D theaters.
Yeah, 3D is just a whole other animal. And again, that's another cost that exhibitors will have to do. The problem is that this is a watershed year. Like I said, 2012 is going to be a watershed year for the business, because not only is that going on, but you're starting to really see a shift away from even film in movie theaters. I mean, it's been slowly building. You have opera in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You have Broadway plays in movie theaters.
Right,
you have
all
the Red
HD
Sox.
Broadcasts.
You have all these broadcasts going on. What theaters are becoming are less an entertainment center, but more of a food center. The idea simply is to bring people into the theater and then have them eat food, which is why you can see things like you go to these chains and you see about $5.75 small popcorn.
Right.
Now, I used to run theaters. I know what that costs. And it doesn't
cost pennies?
Yes. Yes, it costs about 22 cents.
So that's really the revenue center.
That is the revenue center, yes.
Well, okay, so I guess to frame this for the at-home collector, you know, we think about the collection of VHS tapes that you've got sitting somewhere, or you know...
Or the DVDs that are now worth nothing.
Exactly, exactly. Or, you know, vinyl records if you don't have anything to play them on anymore, that kind of thing. For us, it means pain at home,
right.
But for theaters, this really does mean survival. So are the studios doing anything to help these theaters convert from 35-millimeter film projectors to digital? I mean, they can't be happy about the prospect of losing more screens.
Well, the screens that they're going to lose, they really don't care about, because they've already done the conversion, and there already is a mechanism in place for the industry to make the switch over from 35 to digital, and that's called VPF. Virtual print fees. What this really means is, because the industry is saving $1 billion, they're going to do a kickback to the theaters if they convert over to help pay for these digital projectors. Now, the problem is that program ends in August, and it really only favors the really big theaters. It doesn't favor the smaller theaters because, for instance, if you're an art house, there are very few films right now that are in digital, so they're not part of the program. And the distributor has to be part of the program as well. The big distributors are in it. The big exhibitors are in it. The small people are being left, again, by the wayside, so they're going to be hurt as well.
Garen Daly's with us. He's talking about, unfortunately, not great prospects for the switch from 35-millimeter to digital film projectors at small, local, independent theaters. All right, so how can we help? I mean, I think a lot of people are interested in this, and a lot of people now have smaller independent theaters near them still. Are these the places that are now, you said they make a lot of their money in food? Are they serving beer? I mean, some of them,
right.
I've noticed,
are
food,
beer.
That kind of thing.
I tell you, you know, I'm not that dark about the entire industry. I think there's going to be some attrition. I think some smaller houses are going to be there. But I think with a creative management who understand these changes are coming, embrace the changes, grab a hold of these things and change with it. Not only change with it, but take advantage of it. You're smaller, you're nimbler, you're quicker. You should be able to make changes. You should be able to engage your audience on a much more personal level than these big megaplexes are. And if you do that and you build a loyal clientele, you should be able to survive. Interestingly enough, we're talking about all these switches from 35 millimeter to digital. I was talking to a distributor in New York City last week, and she was telling me that a lot of the houses, a lot of the art houses in New York City are not changing to digital.
Hmm.
They're going to stay 35 millimeters.
So, you're talking about the film forums, the sort of, you know,
the
legacy,
Angelica
the institutions.
The place where everyone else in the country looks to see what happens with an art film before they decided to book it in Iowa,
uh-huh.
or in California or anyplace else. So that's a very interesting thing. So the transition out of the art market to digital is going to be a little slower than it is for the megaplexes and the main business. That's hopeful and should give the smaller operators the opportunity to really rethink what their economic model is and how they can do it. I know of a particular couple of small theaters that if they embrace this, they could not only survive, they might even be able to thrive. Mm. But you have to have the creativity to not only look at what's going on in the business, but also to look at social media. Because there's some very interesting things happening in social media right now involving movie theaters and exhibition.
Can you give us just a little peek?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a new thing coming out that just came out. It's called Tug.com. It is in beta right now. It was just highlighted at South by Southwest. They did very, very well. I was talking to the president via email this morning, and it's going to be rolling out over the next 3 to 4 months. It's sort of like a Groupon thing where a bunch of people want a particular film booked in a particular theater at a particular time, and if enough people vote for it and put their money up for it, it gets played.
Oh, that's interesting. So if you're dying to, you know, you just read about, what is it, Coriolanus.
Or the film that I'm hot on right now called The Best Exotic Hotel.
The Wes Anderson film.
The Wes Anderson film, which is a big art film coming in April. That could be one of the
You
films.
Could get all your friends to vote Absolutely. For it, put up enough money, and it can be shown in your
right.
area.
Right, and the other thing that's interesting about this, this company is now starting to plan film events that you go to their website and they will find the place where it's going to play so that you use the social media. So again, there's some very exciting things out there if the management is willing to engage it and be creative and go after and keep in touch with their audience.
Okay, so good prospects.
I always like being hopeful.
Hunger Games is looking good. What comes after? Just any films you're looking forward to? You mentioned the Wes Anderson film.
The Wes Anderson film I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Mirror, Mirror.
Oh, the Snow White adaptation.
Snow White, as well as The Huntsman. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like a pretty good year for the summer. But again, you never can tell. You go into these films and you try not to have expectations because you want to be surprised and you want to be you don't listen to the hype. Don't listen to the hype because it's all, they're paying you them a lot of money to get you excited about something.
Well, then you're going to love our next segment because we're going to be talking a little bit about a whole new treasure trove of fairy tales coming up. So stay.
I love that.
Audience, stay with us. Garen, stay with us. Garen, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Garen Daly, film consultant and commentator. There are links to trailers and movies and some of the disturbing articles about the potential loss of thousands of screens across the country, although we think there's reason to look up. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. So coming up, more on what I just talking about. In Germany, a discovery that could provide some new source material for the film industry, seemingly starved for new ideas, about 500 lost fairy tales from the era of Mother Goose and the Brothers Grimm unearthed after generations in an archive. We're going to hear a tale or two when Word of Mouth continues after a short break.